It crunching time?
It's crunching time. You ready to crunch some mice? Some Disney mice? Are you ready for a little mouse in a wizard hat? Wait, I don't mean to give anything away.
Oh, it's not like I've seen this movie 17 times.
So this is odd because we're recording an intro even though you've already seen this movie 17 times.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first see this movie?
I can't remember. I think it might have been when we still lived in the fourplex.
The fourplex?
Yeah.
What's funny because I don't remember watching this movie with you.
I don't think you watched it with me. I think you put it on so I would stop annoying you when you did something else.
Oh, you never annoyed me. You didn't annoy me in the house. I just like don't want to interact with people. No,
remember,
I don't.
Remember when we were at the library and it was really stormy and like really windy and you handed me the umbrella and I started getting dragged away?
Yes. I mean, yes. Not unlike something that happens to a certain mouse in a certain movie about a wizard hat.
Crunch.
So what are we watching?
We're watching Fantasia.
From 1940, Disney's Fantasia. So when was the last time you watched it?
I think it was ninth grade.
Yeah?
Because like, I think Miss Myers put it on for choir.
Oh, I see. Because it doesn't have any singing in it?
No, because she needed to keep us entertained while she did something.
Oh, I see. And it's a pretty inoffensive little movie for a bunch of ninth graders, I guess. And it's vaguely educational.
I mean, it's not really, it wasn't just ninth graders because it was in concert choir, so it was a bunch of people.
Oh, I see. Well, this is Fantasia, Disney, mm-hmm. His first major humongous money loser. This movie was a nightmare for the studio, and it's been a nightmare ever since.
But it's considered a classic.
But it is now considered a classic. It didn't start attaining its classic status, though, until like the 1960s, like over a quarter of a century later. And some people blame the counterculture for that. The drug culture.
Oh.
For that. Although that's just sort of like part of the mythology around Fantasia.
It's just Mickey Mouse tripping on some drugs.
What do you remember about Fantasia? Like, what can you tell me?
I remember the fish.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
I remember the fish, and I thought the fish were very pretty.
Yeah? Funny thing about the... Well, we'll get to that later
on. And I remember the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah.
And the brooms.
Yes.
And I remember the very loud bolts of thunder.
From, like, the last sequence, Night on Bald Mountain?
Uh-huh.
Woo!
And I remember... Is there a scene, or is it just a different movie, where there's, like, a whale?
The flying whales?
Yeah.
That is Fantasia 2000, which we are not going to be watching.
Good.
The flying whales. So, that's Fantasia in a nutshell. I guess we don't need to talk about it anymore. Good night, everybody.
Bye. See you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay. So, are you ready to watch it again for the first time, for the last time? Or I don't know if it's going to be last time.
Probably not.
I haven't seen it in a while. So I'm curious to see. This is the latest version, too. This is the latest release version. This is the, as far as they can reassemble, the full-length version of Fantasia.
So it doesn't have the flying whales.
No, that's Fantasia 2000. It's a completely different movie. This does not have the flying whales. It does have the interstitial scenes with the introductions by the narrator, who is not actually voiced by the actor, but we'll talk about that when we get to the discussion about the reconstruction of Fantasia and the lost soundtrack and the modern voice actor who had to imitate a dead actor in order to do his voiceover work again.
I mean, hey.
Whatever works. All right, here we go. See you guys on the other side. Took the breath away from you.
Well, I did run to the car in the freezing cold.
In the freezing cold.
Without a coat.
It is pretty
or
cold.
Socks
out.
On.
It is currently cold outside.
Wow, thanks.
Well, we live in Minnesota.
It's always cold outside.
So it's always cold somewhere outside. It's always cold somewhere inside, too. Freezers, meat lockers,
small spaces that only the shadows can touch.
Yep. It's always cold somewhere. I'm looking at the cat.
Who's not cold.
And she has her paw on the wall.
She can do whatever she wants.
She can do
She's
whatever
old.
She wants. She's very old. 19-year-old cat.
Which is how old in cat years?
A million. cat years. I don't know.
she's Dumbledore. She's the Dumbledore of cats.
Yes, she is. And one day she'll be killed by a boy. Is that what happened to Dumbledore?
No! He was killed by Snape.
Okay. Killed by... I don't want to talk about something bad happening to our cat.
Neither do I. You're the one who brought it up.
But it'll all have been planned by the cat.
Yeah, and the murderer.
To save the soul of a boy. That's what it was.
A small boy.
Small boy.
Who was just trying to protect his mother.
Speaking of murderous small boys, we watched Fantasia.
That has nothing to do with anything we were just talking about.
Speaking of Fantasia, wow. Ugh. That was a different movie than we had anticipated watching. Wasn't it?
It was the worst.
I hesitate to use the word slog, but it was a bit of a slog.
It felt like it took 10 years to watch.
So for those of you who don't know, Fantasia is a Disney film from 1940. It's a third feature film that is... comprised of about 700 short films, each about 9 hours long, mm-hmm. except for one that features a mouse and one that was
features Satan.
All the other ones go on much longer than you would think that they...
I liked the centaurs.
Okay, so...
Until it got to the point where it was like, why is this going on for 6 years?
So even the good ones seem to go on a bit long. Like, even the ones that I'm like, this is relatively enjoyable. Then you're like, all right, that was 5 minutes of that. Now let's move on to the... Nope. No, it's...
It's 15 minutes and still going.
Still going strong. Or going on, I guess. Because it... Wow. So, when we recorded our intro, you were like, I love Fantasia.
Because I only remembered the good parts. I wonder why.
You only remember the good parts. Was it possible that you've seen it mostly in classes? Mm-hmm. So you, like, could look away at times?
Also, like, making jokes about it with, like, friends. Like, the only way you could, enjoy this is if you're a young child and you're in class with friends and you're making fun of a bunch of it. Or if you're high.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the only... Well, maybe it is the only way you can enjoy it. I was going to say, I know plenty of people who absolutely love Fantasia. But I start to wonder, have you actually watched Fantasia? Or is it one of those things that you're like, I know it's beautiful and I know it has a lot of cool, innovative stuff in
it. And it will make me sound cultural if I enjoy it.
I don't know if people are being disingenuous. I just think it's one of those things that... It's not the kind of movie that...
If you really sit down and watch it, it's not enjoyable.
It's not, a consistently entertaining work. Well, there's many reasons that could be the case, but...
It's beautiful.
It is. So just a little bit of background. So Disney had a major hit on their hands with Snow White.
Yep.
And a major reputation from just their history of animation. They were working on Pinocchio, and...
Pinocchio.
Oh boy... Were they going to stand to lose a whole heck of a lot of money? Now, Disney also had this character that people used to like called the Mickey Mouse. And the Mickey Mouse was so popular that people recognized him all over the world. But Mickey Mouse was... No one liked him anymore. He had fallen out of popularity. None of his stuff was... No one cared about the Mickey Mouse. And so,
well, I mean, now they do.
Now they do, but this is 1930, whatever. So while Disney got one of their animators to redesign Mickey Mouse, make him really cute, and was like, we got to put this guy in a new cartoon. He looks great now. So he's like,
he lost some weight, grew some facial hair.
Yep. He got a little makeover, mm-hmm. little image consult.
He stopped screeching.
He was still a screech. Not in this movie, though. He doesn't talk at all.
No one talks in this movie.
No one talks. Someone talks in this movie. Someone goes on at length in this movie. Oh, Mickey Mouse does talk in this movie. He's like, oh, thanks for showing the cartoon. He shakes the guy's hand in the shadow. He pulls on the guy's coattails.
I try and forget all the the scenes between.
Did you like the cartoon? Short things. So in any case, he wanted to create a new cartoon with Mickey Mouse. There was an idea to have Mickey Mouse star in a film based on the Sorcerer's Apprentice piece of music. When also Sorcerer's Apprentice is unusual in Fantasia in that it already had a story that went along with it, like,
and it was actually good.
Well, because there's this full story. I mean, there's a poem called The Sorcerer's Apprentice, and the piece of music was written to go along with it. And then, so you could just sort of animate to that. Like, it had a point. And Disney was like, well, we can't stretch this out into a feature film, but what if we made a bunch of short films? That'll be cheaper because we could have different groups working on them, different directors. And it was really difficult for Disney to make movies and to make money at this point because they couldn't distribute anything in Europe because there was a World War II going on at the time. So they were kind of in dire straits. So Disney met, what is that guy's name? He's the...
That guy.
the
that boy,
the conductor guy, who's
it's
like
that boy,
who's that boy?
Is his name like Dean something?
No, not Deems Taylor. Deems Taylor is the guy you just love with the glasses. The conductor is Leopold Stokowski.
Who's the guy with the glasses?
Deems Taylor, the narrator. He had little round glasses, and he talked like this. Deems Taylor.
Oh right.
You never saw Stokowski. He was always in shadow. It's easy to confuse the two and think that Stokowski and Deems Taylor are the same person, but Deems Taylor is not Stokowski. So Stokowski was this super controversial conductor who
Right, he's the conductor. Yeah, okay.
Yep, yep. And he was super controversial in the world of classical music. He conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra, and he was known for like taking classical music and like rearranging it, reorchestrating it, like. He believed that art should live, and so did Disney. Disney was like, no, art's not static. You got to keep working with stuff and creating new stuff out of stuff. And so they collaborated on this movie, and Stokowski chose, like, arranged the music, did the arrangements. And they were like, hey, there's this guy, Deems Taylor, who's famous for, like, his radio stuff about classical music. Let's have him narrate it. And he made it, and he put it all together.
And it bombed.
And it boy, did it bomb. It required like movie theaters to install a new sound system, and most of them didn't want to do that in the first place. It was impossible to sell. It was over 2 hours long. No one wanted to release it. No one was happy with it. RKO didn't want to distribute it. Disney decided they did this like whole road show. They like sort of, they were like, it's art. So we got to like take it on a road show and like show it around. Long story short, this movie did not turn a profit until 1965, I think, like 25 years later, it finally started making back its $2.8 million budget. Fantasia.
He did have a lot of other successful movies, though.
Not animation-wise. Here's the funny thing. Disney made a lot of money on Snow White. It was successful. He made money, I think, on Pinocchio. After that, they didn't make money on movies until, like, well, in animated films until like the 1970s, maybe the 80s. Like, there were just decades where Disney was just hemorrhaging money.
When did Ariel come out?
That was the beginning of the new Renaissance.
Yeah.
The Disney Renaissance in the late 80s. And until then, like, by the 80s, Disney was a joke. Michael Eisner wanted to stop making cartoons altogether. They just wanted to focus on the parks and the merchandising. Disney wasn't a big, they got a lot of the money from the government to make like movies for the government. Like, that's how they kind of stayed afloat for a while. One day you should sit down and just read the history of the Disney.
I don't want to.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
I don't care.
Touche. All right. So speaking of you don't care, let's talk about Fantasia. I feel bad not liking Fantasia that much.
I don't.
I do, because I appreciate Fantasia.
Yes.
It's gorgeous in places.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Yeah, there are times when it's like looking at the most beautiful painting in the world, but someone's standing behind you going, now keep looking at it for 15 minutes.
It's like looking at the most beautiful painting in the world with your eyes stapled open and you're restrained to a chair.
It's like looking at the most beautiful painting in the world, but before you look at the most beautiful painting in the world, this nerd comes up to you and is like, what you're about to see is some painting that's blue and red and painted with paint, and it hangs on the wall.
And this is what it represents, and this is what you're supposed to see.
And this is what you're supposed to think about it. Also, it's got flowers, and you're going to like it a lot. And you're like, oh, we know, just let me see the painting.
No, the thing is, you're looking at it while he's talking, and you can't focus on what you're trying to perceive from it. He just is talking and talking and talking.
Let's talk about the look of Fantasia. So we got this sort of cool thing with a orchestra. You see the orchestra in the beginning in like the interstitial scenes. You only see them in shadow. Mm-hmm. And it's a cool effect. Bearing in mind also that like nothing like this had ever been on screen before.
Except for it takes 5 years for them to come on stage.
It does. So you get to see the orchestra like assemble and tune their instruments.
Which is interesting.
It's interesting. Like if you're in a music class and your orchestra teacher is like,
I mean, I can see that anyways because there's an orchestra in my school.
Right, you can see that anyways just because we know what orchestras look like. Mm-hmm. Again, it's interestingly done.
Yes.
You don't ever see their faces. They're lit in beautiful swaths of color. Again, gorgeous looking film. Mm-hmm. Stokowski comes on. He's always in shadow.
Which is good because I don't want to see his face.
Then there's Deems Taylor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you mean the other guy?
The other guy. What's interesting about Deems Taylor's narration, though, that we can that when we watch the movie now?
It's not him.
Ironically enough, the man famous for his voice is not heard in the movie Fantasia. Why not?
Because he died and the film got degraded.
Okay.
Because he died.
He died. He died, but like many actors are dead and you can still hear them on screen.
Yes, but this was the time when you needed to keep things good. And it wasn't good because nobody cared.
So the way they processed the sound in this movie was all janky and weird. And the vocal track of him doing the narration was, like you say, it just crumbled to dust over the years. They couldn't they couldn't restore it. When they were doing restorations of the movie, and because like over the years his stuff was just completely cut, like because the movie was shortened and shortened and shortened,
which is I think for the best, but
I think so
apparently
too. Well, no, and it's also best for us to watch the actual, like, as close to the original as we could, just to sort of see like what the big deal was.
Yes. And don't watch it.
And it added nothing. But so they had to get Rob Paulsen, who is a very famous voice actor. He does a lot of work for...
It's like the Abe Sapien. It's like that one guy doing his best impression of Doug Jones while Doug Jones is playing Abe Sapien.
And it's Rob Paulsen doing his best impression of Deems Taylor. Pretty good impression. It doesn't always quite sync up with the lips.
No, it doesn't.
It's weird. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a fault of the dub or if it's a fault of maybe Deems Taylor's lips never synced up with the words he said.
Maybe Deems Taylor's lips were at fault.
Yes. Maybe it was the fault.
Maybe he didn't actually ever speak. It was just telepathic.
Maybe it was Walt Disney provided the original voice. Oh, Lord, I'm Deems Taylor. Walt Disney did Mickey Mouse's voice for decades.
Yes, I know.
That was like the thing. That's why I did that joke.
It's a joke. Haha. Laugh.
But the thing is that he introduces each piece and he just tells you what you're about to see.
Which is fine.
It would be cooler though if he was like, give me like 2 minutes of information about the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Like what it was.
Who wrote it? Like, don't just brush over the composer's like history. Why did the composer write this?
Right.
What was inspired?
We know we're about to see an interpretation visually of it. Like, why not give us a little background? Instead, he's like, you're going to see beautiful colors swirling around. We're like, yeah, we know, because we're gonna see it. Like, it's like when you watch a movie with DVD commentary, and all the people do is like tell you what's happening on the film at the time. You're like, yes. He's like, oh, here's the part where I walk through the door. And
I like it when they're like making jokes and like, oh, here's like some history about like why this scene is shot this way.
Right,
like,
right.
That's good. That's commentary.
Yeah, give me some information, Deems Taylor. Well, you're dead, so you can't. Okay,
commentary, not narration.
So the first piece we see is Toccata and Fugue in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.
The music is beautiful.
Of course, it's Bach.
The visuals are completely unremarkable.
They are, again, it's this abstract thing where you're kind of like they're illustrating the sound of the instruments. And it's trippy, I guess.
Again, you would have to be on a lot of drugs to enjoy this movie to its full extent.
I could see if you had like had like a few like mind-altering chemicals and you're watching this, you'd be like, far out, dude. Oh, I get it now. But otherwise, like, it's an interesting exercise. Like, it nothing.
I think that it's very good for like meditation. It's very like, this is what you're seeing and hearing at the same time, and it's very like calming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not interesting.
Yeah,
like if a kid were to go see this, they'd be like, this is boring, I'm leaving.
I don't know. I mean, kids do see Fantasia. They do.
Yeah, with their friends. And they make fun of it the entire time.
You could see it with, like, if they do productions where you see it with a live orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
That might just be more interesting just because you get, like, the full impact of an orchestra.
Yeah.
Like the seeing live orchestra music is different than seeing recorded orchestra music because the sound, like, just hits you, and it's a lot more moving. In any case.
I'm excited to see the orchestra perform on our D.C. trip.
There you go. You're going to D.C., you will see an orchestra perform.
Well, I'm seeing the school orchestra perform. And I'm also seeing an orchestra perform because that's part of the trip.
Woohoo!
I'm also going to the Spy Museum, which is very exciting.
Maybe they will play Toccata and Fugue in D minor.
I really hope not.
By Johann Sebastian Bach. This was a very controversial one because Johann Sebastian Bach did not intend for this song to ever be performed by a full orchestra. It was written for like the harpsichord. And it was Tchaikovsky who adapted it for full orchestra because he was like, this is what I do, man. And people were like, outrageous. You've sullied the name of Sebastian Bach.
Ah, people.
So I don't know who to hate more. In any case, the next piece is Nutcracker Suite.
I mean, it's beautiful.
And it's got some cool parts.
Mm-hmm, like the fairies.
My favorite part, though, is that Deems Taylor does give us a little background. And he says the fascinating thing, I found the most fascinating part of this whole movie, where he's like, the Nutcracker Suite, the Nutcracker is a piece by Tchaikovsky, who wrote this to accompany a ballet that no one ever does anymore. It's lost to time. But the music you might recognize, and I was like, wow, there was a period of time when people didn't perform the Nutcracker. Like, it wasn't a Christmas tradition. It was just this, who cares? He's like, you won't see anything about Nutcrackers or Mice Kings here. You'll see something totally ridiculous. And what you get is one of the more famous scenes from Fantasia, or segments, or some of it's the most famous part from Fantasia.
It's kind of like a conglomeration of, like the best parts of Fantasia are like a conglomeration of, like, snippets of certain scenes kind of mushed together, yeah, and, like, chucked.
So what happens in Nutcracker Suite?
Fairies and fish.
Okay, what are these fairies, they...
They come out of flowers.
Well, they spend a... This is the one where it's, like, there's fairies for the morning... And fairies for...
And the seasons.
Oh, so the seasons. Fairies, yeah, for the winter, fairies for the spring, fairies for the
summer. The morning and the night come later.
That's
and
right.
They're not fairies.
So you have this whole theme starting where it's like, here's the way, like, this time is represented. The time, mm-hmm, passed with these... With the life. It's something that's going to crop up a lot. Because we've got the fairies doing the four seasons. Later we'll do Dance of the Hours, which is literally Dances of the Hours. Like, so you've got... It's a recurring theme in Fantasia that... Could be cool if it was a real through line, but instead I find I'm like, it gets very redundant.
And you start noticing the time, and
yes,
it's worse.
Please, 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 Fantasia, don't call attention to the time, because this is a long movie. So the fairies look cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like them. They're very pretty.
Mm-hmm. They're pretty fairies. They open the flowers, and they're born from the flowers, and they dance around the flowers,
and they become the flowers.
And they enchant the flowers, and the flowers become them. Some of the flowers aren't fairies, but they look like they could be humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of weird.
Like, and they like dance
around
with other flowers.
Yeah, but they're not. They're just whipping around. That's probably one of the cooler effects, is like they manage to animate nature in a way that makes it look like it's like
human,
anthropomorphic, but it's, yeah, not. Like, it's still, they still just manage to just show the features of a plant.
Mm-hmm.
No, I appreciated that.
Was there a scene where there was like a flower and they were doing like the can-can, and the legs were like the little, like,
does that happen to Fantasia?
I don't know. Is that just something I made up in my brain?
No, it sounds familiar. It's not in Fantasia, because they do not play the can-can during the Nutcracker Suite. There's the part that goes
that one. Yes, yes.
It's not can-can, but yeah, it's it represents,
they do that
skirts
dance thing.
Yeah.
This is our Fantasia reenactor.
And then you have the
Can you listen to your voice?
Is that the one with the?
Is that the fish?
Is that the one with the mushrooms?
The mushrooms.
No, that's
the mushrooms.
So there's the mushrooms, which are racially insensitive. A little bit.
Not
mushrooms.
A little bit, a lot.
A little bit, yeah. But it's so cute. There's a little baby mushroom that runs around. There's a lot of flowers. A lot of flowers and mushrooms that do dances.
And fish.
Oh, right. Let's talk about them fish.
The sexy fish.
The sexy fish with the batting eyelashes. God, Nutcracker Suite's long.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just goes
I'm
on
sure it's more
on
interesting when you play it with the ballet, but... It's really not that interesting when you play it with the sexy fish.
So the sexy fish looks a lot like the sexy fish from Pinocchio, because they were experimenting at this point with water effects, and
they hated it.
They hated doing it so much they never did it again until The Little Mermaid. But this is the fish. They use the same fish model in Pinocchio,
yeah,
for Cleo the fish. So which is why it looks like, oh, that looks kind of like Cleo the fish. Interesting.
It's too sexy.
This fish is too sexy for this film.
It's not even too sexy for this film. It's too sexy for a fish. It's a fish.
It's got full lips.
And like an hourglass figure.
And batted eyelashes.
And eyeshadow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not allowed. It's a fish.
That's a pretty sexy fish.
Are you a scaly?
No, I don't even know what that means.
It's,
anyway.
It's like a furry, but
yes, I could
scales
figure it out from context. Thank you. Next up on our list is The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Do we even have to talk about it? It's so good.
Yeah, it's very good. Everyone knows Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Broomsticks and water and
wizard hat.
and angry old men.
New design of Mickey Mouse at his cutest.
And then after that...
Wait. Sorcerer's Apprentice, a little, it actually did scare me when I was a kid. There's a scary part.
I mean, yeah, I can see that.
There's a part where you only see the shadow of Mickey chopping the broom to pieces. That part wigged me out because I was like, oh my God. Like,
murder.
Well, because, you know, the broom's not really technically alive, but it is animated. And to, like, when I was like 5 years old, I was like, And then when the pieces start sitting up and they become like new brooms, and like, as you pointed out, and they have buckets, which is, where's the buckets from? Like, the broom was enchanted, but not the bucket. I don't know if it's just, I don't know, contact magic?
Contact magic.
And as you pointed out while we're watching it, the, that's a lot of water. They fill it up with a lot of water.
Yup.
I mean, but like, a lot more than you would think they could accomplish with just, even with two buckets a pop.
Yeah, like, there's not that many brooms.
Well, yeah, so, and then we get Yen Sid, the wizard, who became a stock Disney, a Disney villain in later things, such as Kingdom Hearts. He shows up.
Was he in the sword one?
Sword in the Stone?
Yeah.
No, that's Merlin.
Well, I know that, but there's an evil wizard in that.
No,
there's
Madame,
the evil witch.
There's Madame Mim, the evil witch. No, Yen Sid, he only shows up in, like, I think he shows up a little bit in Kingdom Hearts. He may have popped up on, like, House of Mouse.
Remember when I got the Oogie Boogie?
Yes,
thing
I remember
first
you got the Oogie Boogie before. Yes, I remember when you got Oogie Boogie before I could. Thank you for always bringing that up. Yen Sid, it's Disney spelled backwards.
Cool.
No, it's not.
I can't spell that, so I would just have to trust you.
It's Yen Sid.
How do you spell that?
Okay, so we're about at hour 50 of Fantasia. We're about to enter into the long...
We have to talk about Mickey Mouse's discussion with... Discussion with the composer.
Oh, yeah. So Mickey Mouse has a talk with Stokowski. What does he say?
Oh, good times. Something
you
like
remember,
that.
I thought you remember what he said. he like pulls, you see him like pull, it's like this interaction of live action and animation, which is a shadow, so it's not that impressive, but he pulls on Stokowski's,
I like to imagine it was just like a bunch of like finger puppets making Mickey Mouse.
They didn't want to spend money animating it, so it's just like a intricate hand puppet shadow work.
They got like a like traveling troupe of like finger puppet people to make Mickey Mouse.
So yeah, he just pulls on his coattail and Stokowski's like, well, what are you doing? He's like, I just want to say you're doing a great job.
Goodbye.
And that's it. Next up, the 7.5 hour long Rite of Spring. So it's about like the
origin. The birth of the world.
So yes, and it's according to Deems Taylor, based on the only segment based on actual scientific research, which is not, and it's wrong. And I don't think even at the time scientists thought this was anything like what happened.
Like, we know about the dinosaurs. We remember the dinosaurs. But the beginning scene isn't dinosaurs.
Yeah, okay, so everyone thinks, oh, Rite of Spring, it's the dinosaur scene. That's awesome. But A, it's 17 hours long, and the dinosaurs are only in the last 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is like, let's begin with whizzing stars and smashing planets.
And then some lava and some water.
Some lava? I think 19 hours is devoted to watching lava come out of the ground. It's like, okay, we're just watching.
And then 19 more hours is devoted to water.
Water. So here's some water.
And
some
then
rain.
They meet.
The lava meets the water and turns into
rocks.
Rocks.
And then it transitions.
Into.
No, then there's the tornadoes. Because the air gets mixed up. And there's a lot of weird natural. I don't know how tornadoes work.
Tornadoes. How do they work?
Well, like, then there's like that weird, there's a weird weather stuff, and lava eventually gets like destroyed because it represents evil.
Yeah, lava's bad. Meanwhile, there's microscopic
organisms.
You
can drink lava, but only once.
You get to watch microscopic organisms develop into
more microscopic
multiple celled organisms, which then develop into more complex organisms,
which then develop into some fish.
Which
then develop into some weird, like, Dr. Seuss-esque, like, land fish.
Right. Then they slowly become proto-dinosaurs, which then slowly become dinosaurs. Okay, so this is a process that in real life took about
10 billion years.
5 billion years, and Disney decided to honor it by showing it in real time. Because, oh boy, are you subjected to watching all of this happen? Then, but you do get finally get two dinosaurs. You get to see okay, these dinosaurs are amongst the least anatomically accurate dinosaurs.
They're hideous.
Ever committed to film. This is still back in the day, of course, when we thought dinosaurs were slow and stupid and dragged their tails and lived in just existed only in swamps. Because how could they have supported their own bodies if they weren't constantly bobbing in the water, which was apparently a thing early scientists thought.
How do we support our bodies? We're not constantly bobbing
until
in the water.
Someone was like, oh, look, here's how it works. But they're sort of like sloppily. This segment is slow. And it's basically takes you through the dinosaurs. You get to see some dinosaurs fight each other.
You get to see dinosaurs eating leaves off trees while they're living in water.
You get to see dinosaurs eating other dinosaurs.
You get to see a T-Rex destroy a Stegosaurus, my favorite dinosaur.
And then, to make it all worse, you get to see dinosaurs slowly dying.
Of thirst.
Literally dying of thirst. Like,
another 5 billion. Another real-time activity.
If you ever wanted to watch an animated movie where dumb animals, like not like
quirky, like
anthropomorphized animals, but just animals that are represented as dumber than they actually were,
slowly die.
Suffer and die and then turn into bones.
Oh, and children too. They're children dinosaurs.
Yeah, children dinosaurs, dino babies die. Then boy, we got the movie for you. It's called Disney's Fantasia from 1940, Rite of Spring. Now, the funny thing about Rite of Spring is, it was written by Igor Stravinsky. And Stravinsky was the only living composer at the time that this movie came out. And
Disney, was he like, what is this?
Disney was like, oh, we totally got Stravinsky on board with this. We told Stravinsky and I, we worked together to tell the story he loved. And Stravinsky's like, I'm going to call BS on that. I never talked to Disney. I hated this. This went against everything I ever stand for. Rite of Spring is supposed to be about, like, it's supposed to be native dances that usher in, like, it's a rite of spring. And it's not
slow death.
It's not slow death of dinosaurs. It was appalling to Stravinsky. It was appalling to Stravinsky's people. It was appalling to lovers of classical music.
It was appalling to just the general public.
Now, all that aside, of course, that's unfair to judge the movie itself based on that. But they didn't choose. This is a movie in which Disney did dinosaurs killing and fighting each other, and it's boring as all get out. Like, I had trouble keeping awake.
I didn't keep awake
during Rite of Spring. I was just like, come on.
It's like, it's not like it's just slow torture death.
Yeah, it is a nightmare on celluloid, and it's not even good looking. It's not. Some of the natural, like the disasters, they accomplished some cool stuff with the lava, with the explosions
like,
and
that's
stuff. Like,
pretty.
It's fine, but oh boy. And so after you're subjected to the cacophony of sadness that is Rite of Spring,
you just want to stop watching the movie.
Unfortunately, you can, because there's a 15-minute intermission.
Mm-hmm. Literally 15 minutes.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves a treat. I think I'll get some milk duds. I think I'll get some milk duds.
And this is what we call our 15-minute intermission, everybody. See you later.
And wash it down with a Coke. I think I'll get some snow caps. I think I'll get some snow caps. I think I'll get some snow caps. And wash it down with a Coke. Think I'll get some. Never mind. Anyway, so yes, there's a 15-minute intermission. And this is also the first movie we watched for this that we could just like pop on. It was on Netflix. Soon to be taken off Netflix. Now that Disney's pulling all of its stuff off of Netflix.
Why?
Because they're starting their own streaming service.
Oh, they already have their own streaming service.
They're starting their new streaming service. Now that it's going to be like them. They're pulling Marvel from everything. They're pulling Disney from everything. They're going to be pulling Fox from everything now that they have Fox.
So everything good.
And they're going to have their own streaming service, which will just be showing like Disney films and Marvel films and Fox stuff. And it's going to be great. We're going to love it. It's consolidation of properties. Everyone loves that. Everyone loves monopolies. It makes everyone happier. All right. So after
that's
the.
Not true.
But if you watch it, of course, there's not a 15-minute long blank screen. It just goes from intermission to let's meet the soundtrack. James Taylor says the soundtrack of a movie is the most interesting part. Let's animate sound.
Spoiler alert, it's really not the most interesting part.
It's really boring. It's a line, and the line vibrates, and it goes on.
It's really weird, and I don't like it.
And it goes on, and then you're dead, and you rot, and you turn into fuel, fossil fuels, and then the next segment starts, which is the Pastoral Symphony by Ludwig von Beethoven, which has centaurs and cherubs.
Which is good. It's fun.
It's fun. Okay, suddenly we're back on somewhat stable ground.
It's colorful. There's like joy and happiness.
Mm-hmm. The characters are cute, maybe a little too cute, but after Rite of Spring.
And meet the soundtrack.
And
almost, anything's welcome.
Everything's welcome. Centaurs and, as Deems Taylor calls them, centaurettes in his little introduction.
Okay. Mythologically speaking, yes, there were no female centaurs. There were no female fauns. Nothing. But you just call them centaurs.
Right. They're just centaurs. Don't say centaurettes, Deems Taylor. Yes. But they're all...
How do they reproduce?
But they're all getting... Well, they're mythological creatures. Like, they just exist because they're right. They're supposed to exist. So this is interesting because this is like...
They answered that question in Xena.
Left dangling by Disney.
Answered by Xena Warrior Princess.
So you get these like centaur guys, centaur women, and the women are getting themselves all dandied up, and the guys are getting themselves all.
It's like the mermaid
up.
Scene from Peter Pan.
Yeah, it's basically that. Yeah, they're just prettying themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact: the centaurettes originally had bare chests, but the censor said, "Nope, you got to put on some bikini tops."
It would have been more correct if they had bare chests.
Right. Plus, you see bare-chested fairies earlier.
And
demons
later.
You see bare-chested demons later. I guess the centaurs fall right down the middle.
I mean, I guess that would be too many.
Yeah.
And, like, too noticeable.
Right.
Because unless you look really closely at the fairies, it doesn't really...
Right. Plus, the centaurs are drawn to look very human.
Yeah.
And
so are the fairies.
So they're all getting dutied up. And, oh, boy, there's some strange scenes in this part because... There's some blank space in a few of these segments. There's characters looking to the left of the screen, and what is she looking at? There's nothing there. Well, what could have once been on this screen? What could have once been on the screen?
A horribly racist caricature.
A horribly racist caricature of a black person as a centaur. A black centaur with black face. And,
it was awful. And, I mean, I don't know if it was. I mean, it was awful, but I wouldn't know because I haven't seen it, which is good.
Yeah. So there's if you go online, go on YouTube. There's a side by side comparison of the original and the redone version of it. And some sequences they've just edited, just cut frames altogether where the other centaur. Some they've zoomed in. They've rearranged some shots just to make it fit. They don't edit the music at all.
Pre-drawn
some. Some they just digitally removed the character. So there's a part where you see like a rug, like a red carpet unrolling itself by itself.
I mean, it's a magical
world. It's magical world, so it doesn't really stand out. But there's one where the black centaur was supposed to be holding the train of a non-black centaur and like helping her like walk. And she's looking back at the little centaur and like smiling at it.
She doesn't have a train either.
And then the frame is still kept the same way. So there's just blank space on the ground. And she keeps looking down at something. And you're like, I don't know what's going on.
I mean, I just assumed she was like doing that weird like fashion show thing.
Right. But it's was cut. It's one of the few like major edits from a Disney film. Pecos Bill's Cigarette from Fun and Fancy Free is another one.
But it is good to acknowledge because it is a historical thing.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was there, and
it was awful.
It was awful, and people responded negatively to it when Fantasia came out. Like that's how much people were just like, that's kind of weird. And then over the years, people kept just being like, dude, with the centaur. So, but this isn't all because, as with every segment of Fantasia, it goes on all along. We get introduced to Zeus
and Pegasus,
and Pegasus and Vulcan.
And
Bacchus.
Dionysus.
And
is Vulcan in Greek mythology?
Vulcan?
Yeah.
Isn't Vulcan Greek? Is Vulcan Greek?
Well,
yes.
No.
Vulcan is Roman.
Okay, so it's Vulcan, Jupiter, and Bacchus. I'm not calling him Zeus, because that's incorrect. Well, it's wrong.
And they never say their names out loud. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, and then Bacchus comes and is drunk and fat and happy, and it's great.
And he has his fawns.
He's drunk for a little too long.
And the fawns stomp on the grapes a little too long.
Right. And Zeus throws lightning bolts at everyone and scares them away. And is that how it ends?
There's Vulcan.
Just hammering away.
Yeah. But he does something. He, like, throws the lightning bolt and kills everything or something. Yeah.
He's Vulcan awesome. Anyway, our next...
The closest you'll ever get to swearing on this show.
Our next segment is Dance of the Hours by Amilcare Ponchielli. It's music that you totally recognize when you hear it. You're like, oh, that's Dance of the Hours.
I think this might be one that we disagree on.
Okay.
Because I found it dull and boring, and I hated it.
I like it. I don't think it's great. I think it's got some cute parts.
I think it's gross and creepy.
Gross and creepy?
I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable.
You have Hyacinth Hippo, and she dances ballet.
You have crocodiles kidnapping women.
But they're doing a dance.
But it doesn't come across
because
like
they're
that.
Knight, and so they have to. So each it's ostriches, hippos, elephants, and crocodiles, and they each or alligators, I guess, because his name is Ben Alligator.
But like,
and they represent the different times of day.
Yes, I'm aware of that. But like,
yes,
all of them are women, and then Knight is a man, and he's just like kind of kidnapping all. Like that's just creepy and gross and wrong.
Well, he's not like chloroforming them and like putting them in like the back of a van.
They obviously don't want to be there. They're running away.
They get the best of him.
They don't though.
So there's a hippo and she's beautiful and she's a large dancer and she dances and Hyacinth Hippo is body positivity on screen
and is also amazing
because there's no jokes at her expense being heavy. She's not a butt of a joke. She's a beautiful dancer who dances beautifully.
She does.
And then there's the elephants, and they blow bubbles.
And there's the ostriches, and they have long legs.
And they have long legs. It's unconventional dancers dancing beautifully. That's why I like Dance of the Hours.
It grosses me out still.
And then we have...
A man being suffocated slowly. The doctor trying to communicate in a weird alien language.
Night on Bald Mountain by Modest Mussorgsky. Modest Mussorgsky.
What is it doing? The bear. What is happening?
We'll get to the bear later. Modest Mussorgsky. Modest Mussorgsky did Night on Bald Mountain. And this
very good.
Is a very cool segment.
It goes on a little long, but it's good.
It goes on a little long.
Actually, it doesn't go on that long.
So what happens in Night on Bald Mountain?
Satan.
Right. Chernabog, as they call him.
Satan rises.
And what does he do?
He raises the spirits and the demons and celebrates a party.
Yes. So this is Walpurgisnacht and Chernabog, or just the devil, is the size of a mountain.
It's really cool.
And he pulls
He isn't the size of a mountain. He is a mountain.
Oh, that's right. He unfolds his gigundic wings. And it's like, oh my goodness, that guy's up there the whole time.
Yeah.
Bald mountain.
He doesn't have any hair.
He is completely hairless man.
Well, I mean, we don't see, like, any other part of him besides, like, his, like...
He doesn't have any chest hair. It'd be weird for a guy that size.
Would they be like trees?
Yes. His chest hairs would be like trees.
Well, I mean, like, he's the size of a mountain. You would think, like, there's, like, growth on the mountain. So maybe he has, like, tree hairs.
I don't know. Because they were all hidden from view, though, by his wings. Mm-hmm. His chest is the inside of the mountain.
His chest is the lava.
He pulls the ghosts out of their graves, and they are skeletons and skeleton horses.
And demons.
Yeah, they're pretty scary.
They're good.
And they come up on the mountain, and they dance all night. Mm-hmm. Dance all night.
To the best song ever, you know.
And then then the sun rises, and...
They go away.
And
he folds his big wings and...
Yep. And you're like, that's satisfying. That's a satisfying segment.
That's a good ending.
Good thing it's... Oh, no. wait, we're not done yet, because Disney thought it'd be a good idea to complement Night on Bald Mountain with the opposite of Night on Bald Mountain, which is the Ave Maria by Franz Schubert.
Which is a beautiful piece of music.
Beautiful piece of music. Long piece of music. And how did he choose to animate?
Let's show some monks walking on a path.
With?
For 10 years.
Candles.
And that's it.
And Jesus. Because the Lord is the Savior. It's a weird little note at the end of Fantasia. You're like, wow, I just watched some cool demons dancing on a mountain. And then it's just like, no, viewer. Also, remember, my children, that God watches over us all.
I feel like it would have been more interesting if they had transitioned from Ave Maria to Night on Bald Mountain.
Ooh.
Because, that could have been, they're, walking, and it's peaceful, and it's long, and then, thunder.
Yeah.
And then the mountain unfurls, and the monks have to flee.
Right. Now, let's remember really quickly, though, that this is 1940. The world is at war. We are not at war yet, but the world is at war.
But that doesn't matter, because we can't give any of our stuff to them.
No. What I'm saying is many critics believe that this was sort of a necessary response to the chaos and evil in the world. To show the devil on Bald Mountain, dancing and celebrating, and then to have it resolve peacefully with the coming of light.
I mean, it resolved peacefully in the end anyways.
Well, they went back to sleep, but to show that there's then the morning comes, and then there's beauty and light.
I just think it could have been a lot cooler if they had either switched the two around or cut that part, shown the sun rising with the church bells and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And shown that the mountain is really just a mountain and we can surpass it or whatever.
They could have blown it up with dynamite. They could have blown it all up with dynamite and
then eaten the flesh of the fallen warriors.
Eaten the dead Chernobog, moved into his corpse.
They really needed food for the soldiers.
Mm-hmm. So there were actually many segments that were planned for this movie that didn't end up getting made. Some of them got reworked into later films. So what's interesting is Fantasia is known as, this is the movie that's short segments based on music.
Short
segments based on music. But after this, Disney did a lot of feature
better
films.
Stuff.
Well, no, he did a lot of feature films, though, that were still this basic concept. He did Make My Music. He did the Saludos Amigos. He did Three Caballeros. These somewhat abstract anthology films that were basically many short segments.
But he put story in them.
But there were stories in them. Most of the short segments were much more narratively focused. And that's when we got the whale that sang opera at the Met. And that's when we got Fun and Fancy Free. You had these songs and these short films. And they were maybe not. Okay, so when you watch these anthology films, they're also not the strongest things in the world. But they at least have narrative and character.
And they don't have a boring man talk for 3 minutes between everything.
Now, it's easy for me to turn up my nose at Fantasia now and be like, boring, doesn't work.
I think that they could have done a lot of stuff better, but it's beautiful.
And no one had ever done this before. Remember that when Disney made Snow White, everyone thought he was going to lose his shirt because no one had ever made a feature-length commercial movie before by an animated motion picture. That just wasn't a thing. People were like, are you insane? No one's gonna sit through an animated movie. That's ridiculous. And he you can see where Disney was just like, all right, we've got to keep pushing the envelope, we've got to keep advancing the art.
And I think that he did it and he reached the limit and he took a step back.
Yeah. Well, he realized this was a money loser. So the idea was that Fantasia was... He said that he thought Fantasia could run for 30 years without stopping. Because he was going to keep having his animators create new segments, take out old segments. And so it would be like you would run Fantasia all year long.
Would be different every time.
And it would be different every time. Which is a cool idea. It's not a financially tenable idea. It wouldn't work.
Nope.
And I think he realized that pretty quickly. Plus no one wanted to go see Fantasia. But eventually, there was a new Fantasia.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasia 2000, which came out in the year...
1986.
It came out in 1999, actually, originally. It toured film festivals in 1999. 2000 is when it like really hit the big screens. I saw it in IMAX. Strangely enough, they put Sorcerer's Apprentice in that one as well.
It's like the Fantasia, like.
Yeah, it's the most famous part. But also there's a Donald Duck sequence in that one, too. So you get like these two like Disney characters. And it, to me, it unbalanced it a little bit. Fantasia 2000 is cool. I think it's a lot more like immediately enjoyable. They did bring back stupid narration in between each segment, which is...
If you're planning on making an anthology of short films, animated or not, don't put narration between each segment unless it adds something.
Right. Because, I mean, even the presence of the great Whoopi Goldberg couldn't make the narration between segments entertaining. Or, you know what? Animate the narrated segments. Like, make them part of the thing.
Like the parody.
Right. So we just watched, what was it called?
I don't know. The Carnegie Hall presents...
The Corny Concerto.
Corny Concerto.
So there was a Warner Brothers, it was a Silly Symphony, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, Merry Melody.
Right, right.
Merry Melody. It's from 1943, a Corny Concerto, where Elmer Fudd played Deems Taylor. With little glasses and all.
I've seen that before today.
Have you?
I've seen the hunting segment because I watched it in at Bancroft because my music teacher showed it to us.
Oh, cute. Yeah, and it's obviously a parody of Fantasia. It starts with the orchestra in shadow and Elmer Fudd in shadow. And it's just two segments. It's Tales in the Vienna Woods and the Blue Danube Waltz.
It's good though.
And it's good. It's funny. It's got some Bugs Bunny. It's a Bob Clampett cartoon. So it's not. This is much older Disney. I mean, Warner Brothers. Than we're kind of used to seeing in the popular culture. So Elmer Fudd looks kind of weird. Bugs Bunny still looks like a little more loosey-goosey. You got baby Daffy Duck, which is kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
In the Blue Danube Waltz. But you check it. It's online. Corny Concerto. If you're a Fantasia watcher, completist, it's
there. If you like Fantasia, sorry for dragging this movie through the mud.
They've even got a direct reference to a Silly Symphony in it, which is you see two floppy trees hug each other, which is a direct Disney riff on one of their early Silly Symphonies. So it's fun. Fantasia, though.
I recommend it.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. I recommend watching it without the narration.
Mm-hmm. You can skip the narration, just fast forward through it if you see it.
I recommend it. I think it's a good experience to have. It's not for everybody. It's certainly not for children, in my opinion, unless you have friends. but
again, you watched it in my apartment as a child.
Yeah, and all I remember is the fish. Also, honestly, anything you put on a screen in front of me, I would watch when I was a child.
It's hypnotic. I mean, kids may actually have more patience for it just because kids don't know what to do with it.
Kids may have had more patience for it, but kids certainly don't have any patience now.
I will do an experiment. I'll sit Mitzi in front of it and see what she does, and I'll report back.
Like, yeah, okay.
She
can't sit through like a normal movie.
We'll see what happens. It's easily available on DVD. It's like I said, it's available streaming. It's a movie that's been chopped up and reworked so many times that.
Watch it in parts.
Yeah, it's what's great is you can watch in little segments. Just
like one day watch the first segment, mm-hmm. Next day watch the next segment. That way, if you're with the dinosaurs and you're like the dinosaurs are too much, I can't deal with the dinosaurs, you can just stop.
Yeah, and appreciate the fact that a lot of the animation techniques that he uses were being created on the fly for this movie. It was major innovations in animation, major innovations in camera work, in materials.
Underwater.
The underwater segment alone was just like, for its time, was just phenomenal. So as a museum piece, as an interesting piece, I highly recommend, I highly recommend taking a look at it. If it bores you, like you said, you can just turn it off after a segment and go back later on.
Or put some AC/DC music behind it instead of classical music.
Right. Or no, because the classical music.
No. Or just turn the volume off completely and just watch.
But one thing I would never recommend anyone do is take drugs, because drugs are bad, and don't ever.
Unless you need them.
Right, but don't ever watch Fantasia on mind-altering substances.
Unless you want to.
Wink. Wink. Big,
hey,
long.
Your body, your choice.
Your body, your choice. Follow your bliss. Live life the way you wanna. Live your life.
Don't drink and drive. Don't be high and drive.
Right. Don't watch Fantasia
because you'll kill someone.
Drive because you'll fall asleep behind the wheel. Anyway, that's Fantasia. Oh, Guillermo del Toro. This is one of Guillermo del Toro's on his list of movies. Why do you think Guillermo del Toro likes this movie?
I have no idea.
I have a guess.
Sad dinosaur death.
I think that's the reason.
I think it's part of the reason.
I think it's because it's innovative filmmaking.
Yeah.
It's something that he's a champion of. I think that Disney and del Toro have a lot in common. I'm serious. I think that they were both master storytellers.
Not personality-wise,
but they were both very much in control of productions.
In very different ways,
but like I think that del Toro has an appreciation for an artist with a strong eye who wants to push boundaries of storytelling, mm-hmm. and Disney was that. You know, for all of his flaws, Disney was a innovator. And I think del Toro's an innovator.
Well, yeah, I mean, we just saw The Shape of Water.
Plus, like, Night on Bald Mountain. Like,
that was awesome.
That's so del... Like,
if you're not going to watch the rest of it, watch Night on Bald Mountain.
It's got great... The stuff that works in Fantasia works really well. And I can see, like, a visual stylist like del Toro. This movie has, like, a million different visual styles. Like, for a visual stylist like del Toro, it's a sumptuous feast.
Stunning.
Yeah, and if you have it on and you're making dinner and it's playing in the background, great. You get some good classical music. But
or you could just play classical music in the background.
You could just play classical music in the background. So that's Fantasia from 1940, a del Toro favorite. Check it out. Get it on video. Watch it wherever. Thumbs up.
Sorry for insulting one of your favorite movies, del Toro.
Yeah, sorry, but we can't all like everything.
We liked your movie.
We do.
We like all
movie.
Of your movies.
to one degree or another.
Most of them.
So next up. It's del Toro time. We continue with The Ecstasy of Influence and another major innovative classic, 1941's Sullivan's Travels, a film by Preston Sturges.
That sounds really boring.
Well, we will see. You'd have no idea, and you don't know what to expect.
It sounds really boring.
Why do you think it sounds boring?
Sullivan's Travels?
Sullivan's Travels.
That sounds boring.
It is a movie, and it is an hour and a half long. And
that's short.
You appreciate good dialogue.
I appreciate real dialogue.
I think you'll appreciate Sullivan's Travels. Not to color anything, but I'll feed you a little more information before next time, just so you get some sort of opinion going beyond. That sounds boring because it's called Sullivan's Travels. And we'll see you all next time when
it's del Toro time. We have mic stands.